levels. My levels are all over the map today, up and down. Welcome back to the big broadcast, everybody, and we welcome to the show, once again, of course, John Ferrantino, and if I did everything correctly, I should have retired Police Chief John Drake on with us, too. Are you there?
I am.
I'm here.
You're there? I will tell you, John, that Bobby Kidd said, what cop stories is he going to have for Chatham, New Jersey? Getting raccoons out of the tree? What kind of stories?
Everybody's a comic.
Everybody's a comedian. Everybody's a comedian. Now, the reason I played Paul Edison was because the last time you saw, I believe, John Ferrantino. No, I don't know if you saw him at the club, but it was at our wedding in Pennsylvania, if I remember.
Wow, many years ago.
And if you remember, John, we were all, my brother and I were at the bar, not unusual, and you joined us at the bar, and one of my best friends who I lost now 8 years ago, Big Dave, Dave Dwyer, had crashed another party. He was at another party in the hotel, and all of a sudden, here he comes back, a lady's escorting him. You probably don't remember the story, but this lady's escorting Dave back to where we are. And she brings Dave over and says, I believe this belongs to you.
And I do remember that now.
And you said to the lady, and now you bring him back? We don't want him either. So how are you, John?
I'm good. You?
Good. Your daughter is listening in from Kill, someplace where there Kill is in the word there. Down. Yeah. Did you try to do the gray elephant thing?
I didn't. I was The Zoom didn't let me in until just a moment ago.
Yeah, we were keeping you out because that's how we operate here. You know,
that's fine.
Just like a regular broadcast where the talent booker has you slotted. This is your 30 minutes of fame to people from Toronto to San Diego to Killsfell, Wisconsin dumped early. Tenafly is on board. Miami Beach, Morristown's on board. Let's see, you're Fort Myers, Hilton Head, Merritt. I have stacks of people. This show is overnight in 10 days since. John has joined anyway. This is 4 weeks that I've been fooling around with it. It's doing well. So for how many years were you in law enforcement in New Jersey?
I was 30 years, the last eight as chief of the department.
Yeah. And now you're retired, but you haven't left the industry. Now you help police departments become nationally accredited.
That's right. I'm a consultant, and if you remember what our father said, the definition of a consultant is, that's a bullshitter from out of town.
Can you move your microphone a little bit closer to your mouth?
You have an RW? Oh, we can see him too. There you go. John.
Is that better?
Yeah, much better. Yeah. Thanks.
John. Okay.
He's a consultant. Yeah. I think Krispy Kreme is better than Dunkin' Donuts.
There you go. Jump right on him. So now, in all the years that you were on the force, we've talked about this. We'll tell the people that you've had quite a few situations that were kind of eye-opening as a policeman, all the way from chief on down to when you were just a road guy, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, in that particular career, you see the worst in people, and occasionally you see the best in people. But there's nothing more funny than a dumb criminal. And, you know, I have a few of those stories.
And also, I don't want to use the word dumb. I would say an officer that probably didn't realize what he was doing.
Oh, well, I certainly had a few of those. You know, we have in New Jersey an early warning system to try to let us know who the troublemaker is. But I didn't need that. I knew right away from the crew I had. But I did have one officer, 25 years on the job. But each and every one of those 25 years, he was like a probationary patrol officer. It would be like at the end of the New Year's Eve, he'd start all over again as a probationary officer. And he was dispatched to a home on the street he actually lives on a report of a suspicious male going back door to back door. So he arrives, he radios to the dispatch that he has found the young man and that he's going to give him a ride to the train station because he's lost. Now, a total of 51 seconds goes by between his arrival and his departure to the train station. And about 10 minutes after that, the first homeowner came home, found the house burglarized. A few minutes later, two houses down was burglarized. So he had given the burglar a ride to the train station. So now keep in mind, I had only been chief for 5 days. This was my initial the issue with the discipline. But fortunately, the guy that broke into these homes was probably as dumb or perhaps dumber than my officer, because he left a library book on the back porch of one of the homes he had broken into from the city of Orange, which, as you know, is a really pleasant place.
Yeah.
So we dispatch a couple of detectives down to the library and find out who checked the book out last. We go to his home and bring him back to Chatham for an interview. And he basically says, well, you know, if that big, dumb, fat-ass cop of yours had patted me down before he put me in a car and took me to the train station, he would have found the proceeds of the burglary, which was, you know, a couple of Rolex watches and other jewelry and cash.
So he was dispatched because there might have been someone burglarizing houses that didn't see anything suspicious other than a young man who was lost from Orange, New Jersey, was lost in Chatham in a very, very nice area, and who was trying to find the train station. So he decided, you know, be a good Samaritan. You say the good and bad in people. So he decided, you know what, I'll just give the young man a ride to the train station. And the guy got on the train, and he was giggling. And then he got home and goes, hey, Ma, you see my book, my library book? And that was the end of that. So
Well, the reason he expedited his whole interaction with this young man, it was just a few minutes before his lunch break, and he just wanted to get rid of this guy and get back to his house so he could have his lunch.
Well, there you go. Well, that's a combination. That's a two for one. You've got a not too smart and not too smart back again. How many years now have you been doing that accreditation thing?
10.
10 years. I shouldn't refer to it as that accreditation thing, but for anybody that is interested, it's a very big thing now in law enforcement, right? Because the purpose is to make sure that each police department has I always get it wrong. What do they call those? VOMs or something? What is it? You have to have the rules and regulations and things so that everybody knows what they don't. Well, as an example, I don't want to get into this beyond this. I'm sure there isn't anything in the Milwaukee or Minnesota Police Department that says the proper procedure is to kneel on somebody's neck for 8 minutes, correct?
No, that's for sure. We're all trained here in New Jersey not to do that. No chokeholds.
Was that right? Because, I didn't know that.
Yeah, because of the chance of asphyxiation. And here in New Jersey, and I'm not sure what the case is in other states, but we are obligated to receive use of force training every 6 months to make sure that all officers clearly understand what they can and can't do when use of force is necessary. So far in New Jersey, we've done pretty well.
And so when you're assisting the law enforcement agencies to become nationally accredited, that's all part of it. There's a word that keeps not rules and regulations, but something else.
Policies, procedures,
cool.
General orders. They have a number of different names. But
you probably don't have anything in writing that says that if you respond to a burglary call, instead of locking them up, just give them a ride to the train station. That probably is.
Well, this became a public affairs nightmare. I mean, here I am. I'm 5 days on a job as the chief, and now it gets out through discussions. You know, people talk, and it wound up in the paper that, you know, this guy had been escorted to the train station. So the joke was, if you need a ride to the train station, call the police.
Give you a ride. And now it's toilet paper. If you need toilet paper, you call 911. I'm sorry. Do you have a couple of rolls that you might be able to lend me until it's over with?
Yeah.
You had another one. I remember this story when it first happened, where a young gentleman borrowed a car from somewhere and went through at a high rate of speed enough to attract attention. The pursuit. Now, at that time you did pursue them through two or three towns. Is that allowed anymore? Do they, is that part of when you train, can you do that? You can still have high speed car chases?
You can, but you have to have the criminal must have committed a crime of the first, second, or third degree. So, like a stolen vehicle, you can by AG guidelines chase that car. You don't have to, but you can. And if during that pursuit things get too dangerous, then the supervisor should be in a position to terminate that pursuit.
But back in the day when this happened, did you not chase him through two or three towns to finally, he rolled the car, right?
He stole the car. My partner and I were just wrapping up a DUI patrol. It was about 3 a.m. in the morning, and we had pulled over to the shoulder to slow up, to turn, to go across the median to head back to headquarters when this I think it was a Honda, went by us at well over 90 miles an hour. So we gave chase, and this vehicle got onto the interstate going south, and then at the last minute took the off-ramp onto Madison Avenue, and at the top of that intersection is a traffic light, which was red. This kid blew through there at probably 90 miles an hour. What he didn't realize is on the other side of that road is the on-ramp to 287 South.
Oops.
And he went airborne. And we watched this car go airborne up into the trees, and it rolled down onto the on-ramp. And, you know, the young man climbed out of the window.
They're good cars. Those Hondas are pretty good cars.
Yeah, they're the car that steals themselves.
Yeah, there you go.
So we got him, brought him back to headquarters, and we contacted the owner, who was very appreciative that we had recovered her car. And I said, "Well, don't be a little premature here. Your car rolled over four times, and it's pretty much totaled." So she showed up at headquarters later that day, and we inventory stolen vehicles when they're brought in. So we were going through a list of items, and one of the items on there was this device at the time was very popular, called the Club,
sure,
which was an anti-theft device that you bolt to your steering wheel so that it doesn't allow you to make any kind of turns. So she goes, "That's not mine." And so we got a hold of the young man that we had arrested for this, and he says, "Yeah, that belongs to me." And I go, "What are you doing with the club?" And he goes, "Well, I live in a badass neighborhood, and I don't want somebody stealing the car I've already stolen."
so he slapped. Okay. That's of course, and he had a different dialect when he was delivering it. And today in the PC world, you can't really say, "What's up, brother?" "Well, I steals the car. I put it on the wheel. Nobody steals it back from me." I couldn't breathe when my brother told me the story. So they should have hired that kid to do commercials for the club. You know, I steal cars for a living. And when I steal a car, I put the club on the wheel, because then nobody steal it back from me. So that's actually a smart criminal, except for the driving part. So,
I forgot one detail. He was 13 years old.
Really?
Yeah. 13.
Was that his first offense?
No.
No? Wow. Okay. Well, again,
you know, he's 13. He's stealing cars. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, and you know, God.
But he was going to the wrong direction from where he lived.
Yeah. Well, he was going on a Route 24 west that will eventually take you to I-287 north or south. He lived in East Orange, which would have been in the other direction. Okay. He was lost. He I don't think he had any idea where he was.
He stole a car and didn't know how to get home with it. So
right.
Falls under the same category of dumb criminals.
What he needed to steal was a GPS, but
they didn't have it back in those days.
No.
You told me a story one time too, John. My brother was I think he was a sergeant then, but responded to a burglar alarm. There was an alarm going off, and when they got to the house, it was sealed up, and it looked okay, but there was a neighbor, I guess, that had a key, right, John?
Yeah, the neighbor came over. She saw us, and she came over, and she said, "I have a key if you would like to get in," because there were no signs of forcible entry, you know, no broken windows, no pried doors. The house, for all intents and purposes, appeared secured. But Now, keep in mind, this house, this is not a house. This was a mansion. It was up on Fairmont Avenue, which sits on a nice hill overlooking the New York skyline. And so my partner, Jim, and I, we were more interested in getting inside a house to see how the rich live. And
John, I'm sure John Frantina is familiar with Chatham Township, Chatham Borough. People always want to talk about Jersey and think of, you know, Secaucus and Newark and whatever. But there are tremendous areas that are very affluent because of the train tracks. They take the train into Manhattan. So Chatham Borough was filled with Wall Street investment guys and all high earner. That was the crack from my friend Bobby Kidd about taking raccoons out of the trees. But you did have crime in Chatham, right? It was just quiet crime.
We did. But once we got into this mansion, and it's a center hall colonial, just gorgeous. The kitchen was, you know, the size of most people's living rooms.
Anything in the refrigerator?
What's that?
Anything in the refrigerator? No, never mind.
No. I saw the guy's tax bill on the kitchen counter, and really? his tax bill was more than I made in about in every, you know, two or three months.
Wow.
But anyway, we started to search the house, and we did downstairs. We went upstairs. I went one way. My partner Jim went the other way. And a few minutes later, I get this blood curdling scream. So I run down the hall into the room where Jim is, and here's Jim, and here's the burglar who's standing in the closet, just screaming at one another. You know,
Johnny. He opened the door, and he was scared. He opened the door, and there was a burglar, and he started screaming as if I would scream if I was home. You know, that's when police officers. He didn't reach for his weapon. He just yelled for his partner.
Yeah. Oh, and there was, you know, there was no expectation on our part that we were going to find anybody in the house because, for all intents and purposes, the house was all buttoned up, you know. So we were just going through the motions to, you know,
for the
report. Be nosy and look around, and didn't expect the guy to be standing in the closet. That was the master bedroom that he was in, the closet for the master bedroom. And he had gone up a downspout. On a room outside of the house called a Florida room, and it got him up to the second floor, and he actually went in through the window there, which we couldn't see from the ground,
and set off the alarm.
Yeah, set off the alarm.
Was he a career criminal or a first time offender? You remember whether or not he'd been doing it before?
You know, it was quite some time ago. I don't recall.
All right, we'll say he was then.
I remember my brother-in-law was a cop in Old Westbury, and this guy this is, you know, before there was like glass breakers and like microphones and cameras, and this guy had this big mansion, and he was bragging to the police department that he was going away to Europe, and they kept saying, yeah, listen, I don't need you guys, you know, I got the best alarm system in the world, every window is, you know, alarmed, every door and everything. So he was gone for a month. He came home, and there was like nothing left in his house. And the alarm never went off. And when they went back there, they had used chainsaws and cut a big section of the back of the house out and carried everything out through the woods and just basically emptied this guy's house.
Because
the alarm never went off.
There were no detectors on the actual inside. The walls don't have detectors.
The funny part is, in Old Westbury, there's only one way in and one way out.
Wow.
In this really rich neighborhood, so they took everything out through the woods. So what kind of job was that must have been?
I guess there was enough space in between houses that the neighbors didn't hear the chainsaw.
Oh, yeah. No. I mean, you know, this is big estates, like you're saying. You know, they probably thought somebody was doing something in the woods.
We are talking to retired police chief John Draco, who happens to be my brother, same name. He's the older, the more sensible one with the children and the whole life and all that other good stuff. And we're going to talk to him till the top of the hour when we will put the producer on. I also want to mention that Holly from Hilton Head checked in. This is John Ferrantino, that she did also get a gray elephant in Denmark. So Joe's, that was pretty amazing. And there's another here about a 50th birthday party. I'm not sure what that's about, but the producer didn't give it to me completely. And I also remind everybody that on Monday, Bobby Collins will join us. On Tuesday, Sarge will join us. And we are filling in the blanks for the rest of the week. The program has always hopefully been designed now that the first hour, John and I kill time and wait till 11. And at 11 o'clock, the guests come and we put our feet up, ask a lot of bunch of questions and wait for 12. That's pretty much how it's going. So we're back with my brother, John. And so 10 years now you're helping law enforcement. And as far as you, everybody that you work with have passed accreditation, right? Anybody fail? Well, don't name it. Don't name them. I wouldn't.
No. There's no one has failed the program. Some agencies struggled more than others, but
it's 2 years, right? 2 years to get it.
It's really based on about a 15-month program for the initial accreditation. And then every 3 years, you have to be reaccredited to make sure you continue that status.
So when people see, you'll see it on law enforcement cars now. They can put that, right? Just kind of like if you're a member of AAA, they put it on the car that this particular city, whatever, is nationally accredited, correct?
That's correct, yeah. Yep. That's cool. And it and basically, it's like once you get into accreditation, it's like joining a gang. Once you're in, you can never get out. every 3 years they come back and they, you know, make sure your accredited status is still good.
You told me one time too, you were going into Yankee Stadium to see a game and you're on the bridge in Yankee Stadium and a gentleman came up. Go ahead.
Yeah, we were on Jerome Avenue. It was four cops. My sergeant, Jimmy Young, was the operator of the car. And we were in traffic on Jerome Avenue heading towards this was the old Yankee Stadium. And a window washer came along, you know, the kids with the squeegee. Sure. And my partner Jim says, I just washed this car, leave it alone. And we're slowly moving forward. And the kid starts throwing suds and soap. And Jim says, I told you, leave it alone. And the kid pulls out a knife. And he goes, you owe me $2. So Jim reaches into his jacket and pulls out a revolver and says, okay, here's your $2. And the kid took off running down Jerome Avenue. All you can see was asses and elbows.
And Jimmy got out and took the bucket. That put him out.
I mean, Tom, you know, like the Belt Parkway. It used to be like where cars were, if you left your car there for more than an hour, it would be stripped. You know?
Yeah. Yep.
And there was a story years ago about this guy that overheated and he went underneath his car to see if he could get the fan belt. And while he was under there, he felt the back of the car being jacked up. He went out of his car and he went up to the guy and goes, what are you doing? And he goes, look, pal, you can have anything you want in the engine. I just want the tires.
Well, that's true. I'm now getting notes from suggestions of what you should stories you should tell us about. And I hesitate to ask about this story simply because it involves the New England Patriots technically now. And that's not a team that's revered in this neighborhood at all. But I do remember, I think you were on the desk when Bill Belichick called and asked for a favor. Am I right?
Yeah, his wife went into labor, and so we dispatched our ambulance and took her to Overlook Hospital. And then a few hours later, I get a call from somebody from the Giants front office, and they were asking for a favor. It was a Monday, and later that night, the Green Bay Packers had a game against the Giants, and again in the old Giants Stadium.
Yeah.
And what they had requested would we be able to get Bill Belichick from Overlook Hospital to the stadium just before kickoff because his wife had not given birth yet. She was still in labor. So one of my detectives volunteered to take a MARC unit and pick him up at the hospital and take him to the turnpike where we would turn him over to the New Jersey State Police, who would then bring him up into the stadium. I had season tickets at the time. And my seat was in section 302, which was in the west end zone. So as the team is running onto the field, I look down and he's there. There he is. We made it. We pulled that whole thing off. And the next day he came in with a big box of T-shirts and jerseys and hats in appreciation for what we had done for him and his family.
Very nice, very nice. Now, nowadays, if you did that and the word leaked out, it would probably be all over the media that the resources of the local police departments are not there for people like football coaches. But in the old days, you know, that's what you did. You know, you help people out. But now media gets a hold of it and they turn it into something else. Of course, with Belichick, we wouldn't help him now, but he's New England Patriots. So he's on his own.
No, no way.
He's on his own, especially.
He was a traitor. He was a jet coach for what, 30 seconds?
He got out of town before he even came to town. That was quick. It is 9:55. We're about 4 minutes away from the producer and the update on the cruise and travel news updates, talking to retired police chief John Drake about dumb criminals, stupid criminals, and stories like that. We find rats and stupid criminals to be the two hot-button items of this broadcast. Space, too. Space has really jumped in there. And now magic on the radio, because it's very, very popular, that thing with Joe. So do you have one more left, John? Do you have another dumb criminal story?
We had a report of a stolen vehicle coming out of the next town over. And a vehicle was on Longwood Avenue, and we decided that if he went all the way to the end of Longwood Avenue, he would come to a T intersection with Fairmont Avenue. So my partner and I took off blocking the section. Soon if he made a right onto Fairmont, I was there. If he made a left onto Fairmont, my partner was there. 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 Patrol cars across the street, across the road, blocking it. And sure enough, he comes up to the top of the hill and sees that he's cornered on both the right and the left. He jumps out of the car. And it, you know, the old saying is, if you can't get him with the car, you can't get him, because I hate it when they run.
I'm sure.
It is what it is.
An old story.
But he helped us out by leaping over the guardrail. Now, what he didn't know is on the other side of that guardrail was about a 60-degree incline. And once you started rolling and falling, it was like we were free falling.
Yeah.
So we could hear him at trees, rocks, you know, he was grunting and groaning. And he wound up down on Hillside Avenue, which was an appropriate name considering the terrain. And he's laying there in pain. He's got a broken arm and he's got a broken leg, and he was easy to apprehend.
And once again, it's the old, what you have yesterday, John, there was one yesterday where if the guy had thought about it, if he had planned it out properly, I can't remember now, he should have had his exits set up ahead of time, especially if you had to jump onto the car. But criminals by nature, John, this is your business. Criminals by nature aren't the brightest guys in the business. Otherwise, the prisons wouldn't be full. Am I right?
Right. Right.
I was looking at my notes, trying to figure out what we talked about yesterday.
This has been one of those weeks. We both prepare a lot of things to talk about, but the last two or three days, it seems like we never got to them because the shows were busy on their own. So, well, I want to thank retired police chief. I know when my brother, someday we could tell.
I like hearing that word, retired.
There you go. Well, you're not that retired. You're still out there helping other law enforcement agencies become nationally accredited. It sounds so right. So professional when you do that. Anyway, I want to thank you for joining us on the program today, and I want to thank John and Joe Silkey and everybody for tuning in and enjoying this, and especially this week. Our listenership continues to grow on a daily basis. I looked last night again at what they call the historic report of the amount of sessions and hours and thousands now of hours that people have killed listening to this 2-hour broadcast or listening to it later on. And we do appreciate that. And you know what? Let me ask, though. I wonder. I have a note here to ask you, John, about John Drake, about the baby story. What is the baby story? You don't know either? Okay. All right.
No, it doesn't ring a bell.
It had to come by way of a member of the family through the producer's email operation. Anyway, we'll get out of here with that. Coming up in a minute, I should say, will be the cruise and travel news update. John Valentino, thank you very much for a great week.
I just need to say one more thing.
Please do.
You know, thank you so much, Tom, and the producer for making this thing possible. Because a lot of people sitting at home don't know the mental stress that we go through every single day. And yesterday, you maybe have tuned into a little part of it where you weren't supposed to hear. You got an inside look at the madness.
Well, and anyway,
you know, Tom, I just want to thank you because this wouldn't happen without you. Without the producer, and I really mean that from the bottom of my heart. You work really hard on this.
Well, so do you, and I'm glad you're here. You know, I'll speak to my brother, John. I think you know the story. I started this by myself, and John Farentino came on as a guest and afterwards said, hey, you know, I'll sit in and be like your Ed McMahon. Well, I wouldn't accept that. He's a full partner, and he works as hard as I do. And every day we get up. And if you didn't hear the show yesterday, brother John, his daughter Lindsay, the very successful, prolific playwright, said to her father, you're doing this every day? Every day? 5 days a week? Every day? It's a commitment, but I'm having fun doing it. And eventually it will monetize, not mistake.
And I'm sorry I've been so quiet since your brother has been on, because every time you said John, I was afraid to talk. Yeah. I didn't know whether you're talking to me or him.
We should have had aliases, worked with aliases. All right. Well, thank you both. And I'm going to go ahead and close you out and finish up by reminding everybody that on Monday, join us to listen to a really, really funny guy, Bobby Callens, and everything that's going on around the world over the weekend and who died and who was born and all that good stuff. And right now, I'll bring back the producer of the program and say thank you, Stephen Ellie, and everybody. I don't have time to list all the people that are listening, but it is greatly appreciated. Have a great weekend, everybody.